This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
It's a minute.
Big fella woke up here. Chester.
Chester D.
Chester, what's going on, son? You all right? Huh?
It's all right.
No, if Adam can get a shot of our boy, there's Chester looking at us like, well, y'all are just like really disturbing me this morning.
Go back night-night. Go back night-night.
You know, about
Haley
sleep.
Van Lith is not on today. He's upset.
Oh, see, the ears popped up when you said Haley Van Lith.
I'm telling you, people think I'm packed. Your dog doesn't love it.
There we go. Thank you, Chester. That a boy.
And all right. She wrote. I'm telling you, Haley Van Lith, you mentioned the name. It's like, that's why I say it's his favorite player.
Yeah.
He immediately responds to Haley Van Lith. He loves those lefties.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Christopher Davis, Duke baseball outfielder. Grad transfer will join us coming up at 8:30. He's in our club.
That's true.
He is in our club, the Sons of Somebody. And his old man will be here too, Reese Davis. So we're looking forward to doing that. That'll be fun.
Yep.
Coming up at 8:30. We can bus Reese across the street and back.
Plus, do that?
He's sent Chris some money. We're going to get Chris some money out of this, you
Chris
think?
Chris is going Princeton to Duke.
Chris going to be fine, but he still needs a little money to get through the rest of his academic career.
I've never experienced a sibling not needing some cash.
That's what I'm saying.
In school.
So there we go.
Some shape, way, or form.
All right. We'll get Chris some money and visit with Reese.
Pretty good combination, though. Princeton, Duke, educated by the time it's all said and done with.
No kidding.
Pretty strong.
We are big fans of grad transfers who start one place, get a degree, and then like Justin Mutz,
he's
undergrad Delaware, two masters from Virginia Tech.
Right.
That's my guy.
Yeah.
Because that's maximizing the opportunity.
Right. And that's what you have to do.
Yep.
If that inspires you, maybe you got that opportunity as a student athlete.
Yeah. So we're going to talk to Christopher coming up about 8:30. 9 o'clock hour, Ava Hutchin will be here. From Courtney Banghart's basketball team at Carolina. They're headed long trip to Greensboro.
Tell you what, though, got to strap on the A game because
South Carolina
waits. South Carolina's
number
one
team. And we'll get all the updated information on both the men's and women's tournament. Debbie Antonelli will be with us coming up at 9:30.
She's out in Spokane, Washington.
Yeah.
Getting up early for us.
Yeah. So looking forward to talking to Debbie. Guards win championships. How many times do you hear it this time of year, right? You saw it. You know, you've seen it, I'm going to say, 8 times in the last 10 years, basically, maybe a little bit less than that, where teams that win the national championship have really not just a guard, they have two really good guards. And here's a list since 2013. This is the last, it's the last eight. There you go. I mean, from Mitchell and Butler a year ago with Baylor, Kihei Clark and Ty Jerome with Virginia, Jalen Brunson and Phil Booth at Villanova. You see Villanova in 16 with Brunson and Archie Diacono. I mean, it's just what it is.
I just think if, you know, this, there's one thing that has stayed so true to this tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Whether we're in the one and done era, whether we're in the transfer portal era, whether the tournament was 16 teams or 68, it does not matter.
Right.
Your backcourt better be absolutely lock solid good. I mean, it's got to be. And if you're loose with the basketball, I don't care what you do. There is a ending to you at some point in time. So teams with great backcourts, that's why Miami was looked upon as kind of a dangerous team, and they have proven that.
Yeah.
Ask Bruce Pearl. I mean, they embarrassed Auburn. Why? Great backcourt. Dominated. And if you're weak in that backcourt, you can get exposed in this tournament.
And there's not one thing about Miami that – would lead you to believe that they could contend with the Jabari Smith, Walker Kessler, all that combination inside. But the one thing you knew about Miami, they could contend with the backcourt. The backcourt was very capable of winning, right?
And proved it.
And proved it.
Going
absolutely
away.
Yeah, I mean, dictated tempo and took it to the house. There's Charlie off to the locker room in Blacksburg again. That to me, and to a degree with Duke,
Roach.
Yeah.
Look what R.J. Davis is doing with North Carolina. It's not a coincidence. It is not a coincidence. I mean, your backcourt has got to deal, right?
Yep.
I think when you take a look at the 16 teams that are left on the men's side in particular, you know, you can kind of circle the calendar a little bit of what who's got the backcourts to cause a problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? And like I said, That formula has never gone out of business or out of style in this tournament,
right?
Ever. ever.
Well, I still think that, you know, the not that Dawson Garcia's departure from the team led to Brady Manick's emergence, but it does coincide because of just that simple personnel change. But R.J. Davis and Brady Manick, whatever happens with Carolina tomorrow night and whatever happens with Carolina the rest of the way will be in part and parcel because of their impact, those two players.
Well, R.J. Davis taking over the point mm-hmm. has put Caleb Love in his natural scoring position as a two, which right. makes it easier for Manick because you got to deal with Baycott inside. Jeremy Roach is the third leading scorer on this Duke team. We keep talking about all the stars, all that stuff.
And we never mentioned Roach.
Jeremy, and who made the shot?
Oh, yeah.
With 5 minutes to go. Man, Jeremy Roach's three against Sparty down the stretch, yep. I thought was the catalyst shot, that it was a humongous bucket. And he'll have to play great tonight, too. Mm-hmm. Have to play great.
Yep.
So, like I said, you can connect dots to this tournament with great backcourts.
That list is fun to look at. You see Louisville back in 2013 with Peyton Siva and Russ Smith. UConn, Shabazz Napier, and Ryan Boatwright. Of course, Napier changed the game more than just winning a national title in 14. The two Villanova championship teams, Brunson never gets the credit I think he deserves.
Totally agree. And by the way, I was talking about this yesterday on Radio West. Does it not seem, and Jay Wright is a wonderful person and a brilliant coach. Yeah. Great program.
But nobody's talking about him this week.
They don't. It's like they don't even exist. And like, how could Villanova be so under the radar and nobody says boo about them? But man, the other thing is, it seems like they've had great guards for 20 years, right? They always have a junior or a senior with experience, and they always value the basketball in the backcourt. It just seems like forever it's been that way at Villanova.
And I love Colin Gillespie.
I do too.
I mean, Colin Gillespie is so much fun to watch.
They never get rattled too. When you have great guards, even when the other team goes on a run, there's always that, hey, we got this. Let's just do our thing.
They play like he dresses. Smooth, cool. I mean,
Jay Wright's a dude now. I'm telling you, he's a wonderful
guy. Can I tell
guy.
You when he – this is an off-the-market story here. When he was at Hofstra and Cremins was still at Georgia Tech played Hofstra in the Garden in that – holiday deal they used to do back in December. And Hofstra crushed Georgia Tech. Speedy Claxton was on the Hofstra team.
Speedy.
I mean, and they just destroyed Georgia Tech. And the first thing I thought of was Speedy Claxton is a really good player, probably going to play in the league, and did. But they also had Jay Wright coaching. And I kept thinking, man, that guy right there now. That's how, like, the first light I really had come on about a young coach, right? He was such a good coach.
Great.
Yeah.
And a better person.
Oh, yeah. Terrific guy. I mean,
I'm telling you, he's one of the nicest people you'd ever want to meet.
Yeah, and has done so many philanthropic things, not just in Philadelphia, but also nationally with Coaches versus Cancer, as you know. He's one of those lead guys.
He is, and he's a perfect fit for Philadelphia. Mm. I mean, it's his DNA. Yeah. He's in the sweet spot. And, again, two-time national champion. He was a guy, too, Wes, that, you know what, suffered some tough losses in this tournament.
Yeah.
And there were people barking about, when's he ever going to win one? You know, there was a pressure on him.
Yeah.
And when he finally knocked down the door, rest is history. It kind of feels like Mark Few. Again, one of the nicest people you ever want to meet, the head coach of Gonzaga. And there's always that, wow, he's never won the big one.
Tell you what,
one of
now,
these days, he's going to knock that door down. It may be this year, for all we know.
With Nembhard?
Got
you talking about another guard that's good.
No question.
So.
Got to have him. Gotta have him.
I'm curious if Ives is okay when we look at this list of national champions, knowing how close it was in 16. He got it in 17.
Well, you know, when you win multiple,
one in 17 doesn't matter.
And what about what Chris Jenkins did trolling?
People
who aren't on Twitter don't know what I'm talking about. It's one of the greatest troll moves I've ever seen.
Chris Jenkins.
Chris Jenkins, who made the game winner,
which
again, right
Houston.
After one of the, I thought the most underrated great shot in the history of the tournament
by Marcus Page.
Marcus Page's shot.
If Marcus Page's
never
shot
gets discussed,
that's exactly right. Chris Jenkins' shot overshadowed arguably one of Carolina's greatest shots ever.
I think it's the greatest underappreciated shot in the history of the tournament.
Oh, there's no doubt about
because
that.
Because it's not a game winner and it's forgotten
and
about.
And it went.
But it only gets topped by the next play,
right,
which won a national title. But nevertheless, on Twitter yesterday, there was a picture of the North Carolina logo, and the question basically was, who do you think of immediately when you see the North Carolina logo? And Chris Jenkins, who made the game-winning, said,
me.
Me. Yeah, that's a great answer.
One note yesterday, and this has not gotten nearly enough play. I don't know. Did you get into this yesterday on your show?
What's the note?
The Adidas?
No, because I was involved with talking about hoops and the greatest football practice that's ever taken place on a college campus yesterday.
Adidas announced yesterday a new name, image, and likeness network that will allow more than 50,000 student athletes to be paid ambassadors if Adidas has the apparel agreement with that particular institution.
Great. It's awesome. I love it.
Do you?
Yeah. What's wrong with it?
Well, I mean, when are we going to reel this in a little bit?
We're not going to, because it's over. The NCAA whiffed on this 2 years ago.
Well, okay, then we need to move on to whatever the new thing is.
Well, then get moving on it.
Because the old thing is completely out of service.
Wes, there are no rules.
I understand that.
So, but now we have no rules, and I'm all for the student-athlete getting paid.
I'm fine with that, too, as long as it's somewhat controlled and it creates a fair landscape.
You missed the opportunity for that. You, meaning the NCAA, not you, Wes Durham, but you, the NCAA, whiffed on that opportunity.
So,
because your leadership is so pathetic
that
you couldn't get in front of the parade. And now all of a sudden you're looking to folks in Washington, D.C.
You took a 9-0 butt whipping, though, at the Supreme Court. You took a 9-0 butt whipping on the road at the Supreme Court, so you're done there, too.
I don't know why people are surprised. Well, it's a smart move by Adidas, and it's great for any student athlete in an Adidas school.
The only thing I can do is this. I'm gonna say this, and we're going to move on.
Where's Nike? When are you going to come up with
their deal? There we go. And here we go with the apparel agreement. So I remember when all this was below board and hush-hush and illegal? Not anymore.
No.
Because essentially what they're being paid. And again, how can Adidas set up an apparel agreement or a paid ambassadorship with an institution when NIL is not supposed to be implied when you sign? Remember that clause?
I think it's a smart move for everybody.
I don't disagree.
I think it's smart for the company. I think it's smart for the school. It's great for the student athlete. I don't know why you're complaining.
I'm not complaining. I'm just
why are you so upset?
25 years ago.
We're not living 25 years ago.
No, I know that too. But what
I'm getting... 22, my man. Get in the real world.
But what we are doing is we just open up the doors everywhere.
If a company came to us today and said, hey, here's what I'm willing to do. You got a problem with that?
No, not for us.
Right. So why would you be upset for a student?
I'm not upset. Where's the competitive level between the schools?
Wes, it's over.
I know.
That's what I'm saying. You got to get past... The world of college sports 2 years ago might as well be a million years
ago. That's correct.
So you got to get in the real world. It's where we are. That's where we are.
I find it interesting we have come full circle with the apparel and shoe deals. Pac, you remember shoes were violations.
You keep living in the 1982 year. It's 2022.
I know. 40 years later.
I mean, apparently, as student-athlete, to be just signed an $8 million deal to attend an institution.
That is nowhere in any of the writings for name, image, and likeness.
Well, let me explain something to you. And I say this all the time. The easiest thing to do in life is tell somebody else how to spend their money. You shouldn't build that pool. You shouldn't buy that car. You shouldn't go to that school.
Right.
Hey, if somebody is dumb enough to give you $8 million to go to an institution,
right,
you've got to be dumb enough to take it.
Well, and there were $300,000 name, image, and likeness deals for football players.
What they're paying us to sit in a basement and talk sports. If they're dumb enough to come up with this idea, we're dumb enough to do it.
Yeah.
It's no different than a student-athlete kid that's 18 years old and somebody says, hey, I think you're going to be great. Or you know what, sweetheart? You're going to be awesome. I'm going to give you $1 million. Where do I sign? Let's go.
Yeah.
And if you don't produce, guess what happens? Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Catch you later.
There were some players, student-athletes, who had hundreds of thousands of dollars in name, image, and likeness and never saw the field this year.
There was a guy who went to Ohio State, got paid $1.4 million to sign signatures and never took a snap.
Yeah.
He's now at Texas. Awesome. He couldn't play dead in a cowboy movie. He put seven figures in his back. I think that's awesome. Good. I wish I could be so lucky. Pac, you're so terrible at what you do. We're going to give you seven figures to go somewhere else to do it. Please give it to me. I'm in. You're right. I stink. But guess what? I am laughing all the way to the bank. Hey, I'm an idiot, right? Catch you later. I think it's awesome.
Yeah. We'll see how this goes. Nike and Under Armour and all these other places got to be next.
Like Charlie Weiss is my all-time favorite hero. You know why?
Yeah. Got paid not to work at three schools.
How awesome is that?
Yeah. Well, you've always said the best thing in America.
The goal of every American worker is to be suspended with pay.
Yeah.
If somebody is going to pay you not to go to work, that is the greatest gig on the planet. That beats working.
All right, on the other side.
Eventually, you're going to come around and understand what I'm saying.
I understand what you're
saying. You just sit there and laugh at me, but you're not
listening
to what I'm saying.
No, I understand what you're saying. I'm just presenting this as like...
So why are you upset at Adidas?
I'm not upset at Adidas. I'm not upset at anybody.
Dave Doran's football players are going to get paid.
So is Georgia Tech's.
Great. What's the problem?
There is no problem. I'm not mad at Adidas and doing this. I guess my concern is anybody going to step in here and go...
Why do you care? Why do you care? What happens if nobody steps
in?
Well,
I'd like to think at some point down the road we're going to have some kind of, you know.
Guideline?
No, some kind
law,
of.
Law? Regulation?
There.
Well, maybe.
Salary cap? I don't know whatever term you want to use.
Maybe eventually there will be leadership in a powerful role that says, hey, beginning today, here are the rules. But to do that, you would need somebody to wake Mark Emmert from a deep.
Well,
deep
that's
slumber.
Not the guy. You and I both agree on that. But what I am saying, and we'll try and conclude this because Kate Douglas from yesterday is going to join us. We'll show you that again in a moment.
Well, we've already done it, so she can wait.
The idea of this, though, is where I'm – okay, if we're not going to have, let's say, the major Division I schools, if name, image, and likeness is just going to be this open door, right? An endless well of people into the program from a financial perspective for student athletes. If we're going to do that at certain institutions, then let's put all those institutions in one pool.
What have I said to you from day one?
That this is the have and have nots.
In my opinion, I said this 5 years ago. Eventually, I think we're going to have about 40 or 50 schools
that's
play
right.
big-time college football.
I agree with that.
I think that's all we're going to have.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not even going to worry about conferences. It's just going to be regions of the country. And those are going to be the guys that have made a commitment from a financial standpoint, from a facility standpoint, from a name, image, and likeness standpoint that are over here. Now, doesn't mean everybody else is going to go broke. There'll be other stuff, but I think that's exactly where we're headed. And I promise you that's where we're going to go if we don't have any rules. I promise you that's
well,
where
that's,
it's going to go.
And see, when things like this happen, that just further enforces that we don't have any rules.
No question.
Yeah.
But that's the real world. That's called reality.
Yeah. No, it's full-blown business now. The homecoming dance and the letter jackets, we'll let you know.
The college sports that you grew up with, that we grew up with, is gone.
No doubt.
It is destroyed.
That is gone.
That is over. Yeah. Period. It's been buried, and it's 6 feet under. Guaranteed. That's not coming back.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Don't forget where you're home for ACC softball Sunday at noon. In South Bend, Marissa Young's got number 7 Duke on the road to meet Notre Dame. They step in the circle at noon right here on ACC Network and streaming live on the ESPN app. This league's good at that sport, too.
Yep, no doubt.
Yep. Kate Douglas was with us yesterday. Remarkable performance in Atlanta last week at the NCAA championships. Virginia capturing back-to-back national titles, women's swimming and diving, but Kate Douglas in particular with 3 individual national championships. So when she joined us yesterday, she had just gotten out of the pool. Really? So on a week where you have so much success, you're still working again?
Some of us have world championship trials at the end of April, so we don't really get much time off after NCAAs this year, which is unfortunate.
Well, some of us don't, Kate. First of all, congratulations. I mean, that was impressive. Not from an individual standpoint, but from a team standpoint. And I know swimming's kind of unique in that way, but how cool is that? I mean, not only do you get the self-gratification of all the work to achieve your individual success, but to be able to share it with your team and have them have another back-to-back national championship, it can't get much better than that.
Yeah, definitely not. I mean, I think I had some crazy swims myself, but I think the best part was getting to watch all of my teammates also have crazy swims, and just watching all of us do that together was just insane. It kind of just blew my mind.
Kate, a couple things here. One, you've had incredible success internationally. I mean, you were an Olympian a year ago, got a bronze medal. You guys have had great success this year as a team, back-to-back national championships. I mean, this is a this was a dusting of the field in Atlanta this past weekend. You just talked about world championships. How do you process success like this? I mean, people are talking. I mean, Rowdy Gaines used his greatest performance ever. What does that resonate? Where does that fall with you?
Yeah, I mean, that statement is just sounds so crazy to me because I don't think I ever thought I would go to NCAAs and win three individual events, let alone break three American records. So I think I still kind of am in a little bit of shock that I did that. And I keep joking around with like my family that that was like the best meet of my life. And I don't really know how I'm going to ever upstage that. But I think it's just really awesome to see just all the hard work that I've put in this past year and this past like 3 years at Virginia just really pay off that one weekend there.
So how do you reboot? I mean, okay, that accomplished, check, check, check. And now, as you mentioned, you got the Worlds coming up. So how do you reboot and refocus, or do you?
Yeah, I mean, I guess now, I guess this whole season, my focus has kind of been on NCAAs and I guess just winning that as a team. So now I guess I'll shift my focus to World Champ Trials, which is in like 4 weeks from now. But yeah, I think it's just kind of focusing on one thing at a time, because after the Olympics, I wasn't really sure how I was going to kind of like decompress from that and, you know, go back into the college scene. But I think I just kind of shifted my focus, you know, to the college season and to my team, and, you know, that made it work.
Kate, how do you, I want to use this term the right way. You swim with a great team at Virginia. It's not a good team. It's a great team.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great program. Coach DeSorbo has done an incredible job with just building a culture of success with this program. How much of that pays off for individuals like yourself when you go to the Olympics, the World Championships, things like that? The competitive nature of that program and that foundation on a bigger picture or a bigger stage is what part?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just super like awesome that I get to train with this group of girls every day, because, I mean, just getting to push myself and swim next to girls who are going just as fast as I am at these meets is pretty awesome. Like getting to train with Gretchen every day. I mean, we both went under 21 in the 50 free, which is pretty insane. I don't think any other team has ever, you know, had two girls that are like, you know, I guess that like dominant in the freestyle sprints. So it's just pretty awesome to train next to these girls who I'm then, you know, competing with to get spots on these world championship teams. And then being able to go to international meets with my college teammates is, I think, an experience that a lot of people don't have, which is awesome.
It sounds like your schedule is nuts. And oh, by the way, I'm a student at the University
I'm going
of Virginia,
to
a great academic institution. Have you had time to maximize or even touch base with any name, image, and likeness opportunities?
Yeah, after the Olympics, I definitely got a lot of like requests from people, but I kind of just had a focus of just getting like a suit sponsorship. So I'm an Arena USA athlete. So Arena is like the swimsuit brand that I wear.
Sure.
So that's kind of the only, I guess, sponsorship that I've been doing, just cause I don't really have a lot of time with school and everything to, you know, I guess take advantage of all the opportunities that I'm given. So yeah, just kind of that.
All right. How do you process then the schedule? Because you're obviously in the pool this morning and you were there early. I mean, who are we kidding, right? I mean, swimmers don't, I've always noticed swimmers don't go at lunch.
No. Nope.
They always, I mean, nobody goes at lunch. I think I'll go over at lunch and get a swim in and then come back and go to class. So take us through kind of the schedule. I mean, I'm going to guess it's a handful of free hours during the week for you, if that much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I guess it's a little different for everyone, but I have two classes a day, and then we usually have, I guess we swim 6 days a week. We have Sunday off, which is nice. And then we have three or four doubles a week. So on the double days, it's kind of tough because we might not have time for like a nap, I guess, or a lot of free time to do homework. But I definitely try to make time for a nap when I can, because getting up early every morning definitely makes it hard to focus on the schoolwork.
Packer and Durham. It'll be great.
Kate Douglas is awesome.
Big time, right? And not only from an individual standpoint, but the team standpoint. Going, like you said, Virginia goes back-to-back with the Natties.
I said this yesterday. We've been very fortunate. 592 shows. We've had a lot of student-athletes on here. A lot. And really good ones. She's in the top five.
Yeah, that's on your list.
Top five now. I mean, you're talking about an Olympian, three-time national champion of a team that's won two straight. Come on.
I'll say it again. You put the Wahoos in water, man. Watch out.
That's over.
Swimming, diving, and rowing.
There you go.
Good night.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Hey, don't forget ACC baseball Friday night. Look at here now, Pack. Look at the synergy we got on this show.
You would almost think this is planned.
Yeah, I know. Number 7, Florida State. Dick Houser Stadium, Mike Martin Field, Tallahassee. Hello. 7 o'clock first pitch. Chris Pollard's Duke Blue Devils are in town. Game 1 of the weekend set. That's the Friday edition of baseball on the ACC Network. And then we offer you another one as well. All part of that. Georgia Tech and Raleigh, Saturday night, 7 o'clock. Danny Hall, tough loss last night to Kennesaw. Split with the Fighting Owls.
Can't give up 14.
No, and neither can Kennesaw the night before. Yeah. Georgia Tech, NC State, that's 7 o'clock first pitch. Doak Field, Dale Park, and Raleigh on ACC Network and streaming live on the ESPN app. All right. Look at the synergy of this program, ladies and gentlemen, right?
It's going to be fun, this next segment.
All right. Let's go to Durham. Because Blue Devil outfielder Chris Davis is with us, jersey number 50, and he joins us from Duke. Good morning, Chris. How are you? Welcome to our club, by the way. You know you're in the club with us, don't you?
Yes, sir. Good morning. Thank you all for having me on.
All right. Now, you know the club that you're in with us? Are you familiar with that club?
I'm not. No, sir.
We're all the sons of somebody, son. And that's the way this works out. So when you're the son of somebody, you're in this club, right, Packer?
That's it. Whether you like it or not.
Yeah, whether you like it or not, you're the son of somebody. Now, you know, Packer's dad did TV for years. My dad did radio and TV for years. And now you're in the son of somebody club because your dad does radio and TV for years. Works out good, doesn't it?
It works out great.
All right. You have had a fascinating journey in college baseball. Playing now at Duke for a second year. I know you spent most of the year injured last season. Take us through college baseball in this world of grad transfer, portals, all these things, because we talk about football, basketball a lot. But for you, this seems like this couldn't have been a better experience, both academically and athletically.
I've certainly benefited from the experience. I've really enjoyed both my time at Princeton and now my time at Duke. I'm incredibly grateful to Coach Pollard and to everybody at Duke who's really taken me in as a graduate transfer. And, you know, it has been crazy the last couple of years with, you know, people looking for places to play once they graduate. You know, there's plenty of places that don't have graduate programs or like at Princeton, the Ivy League did not allow graduate students to play. So, you know, looking for a team to join and Duke was that spot for me. And I'm incredibly grateful for the chance I've had here and for the way that the team has brought me in and welcomed me in you know, a shorter time than most guys would spend here. But it's been great, and I've really enjoyed wearing a Duke jersey, and I'm just grateful to get to put that Duke uniform on every day. So,
Chris, you know, we talk about this all the time, regardless of the sport and regardless of the student athlete, the object when you get on campus is to get your degree. Explain to folks the process that you've gone through and what you did at Princeton and what you're now doing at Duke from an academic standpoint.
So from an academic standpoint, early on at Princeton, I had no idea what I wanted to major in. So I thought for a while I wanted to do neuroscience. I was not quite intelligent enough to make it in that field. But I switched over to history, which I really enjoyed. And so I got my undergraduate degree in history. I came here last year to the Fuqua School of Business, where I got an MMS degree, a Master of Management Studies. And then this year, I'm pursuing an MBA, so I'll be hopefully graduating here in about 6 weeks with that degree.
To me, that's what it's all about. You know, the baseball is really the icing on the cake. The object is obviously to put yourself in a position, whether you want to play professional sports, go into business, whatever the case may be, And your story, like many other that come on here as far as student athletes, is always interesting. We enjoy it because we're on the couch watching everybody perform. But at the end of the day, you got to get the college education. And you have taken advantage of a situation. And really, that's exactly what it's there for to do. So congratulations on all your success.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
All right. Couple questions here. And then we got your dad on hold here, which is probably good for you. And we're going to negotiate a few things out, by the way, when he's on here, just as your representatives of this. All right. The first piece would be this. Can you compare? I think some people think Ivy League and Princeton and Duke are similar institutions, I'm going to believe, in terms of that and the academic side. Take me through the baseball side, because I think it's a lot closer than people realize maybe in that sport too, Chris, right?
There are absolutely talented players in the Ivy League, and I think some of the guys that we had during my time at Princeton are, are great examples of that. You know, Ryan Smith was a left-handed pitcher that we had at Princeton, who's doing very well in the Angels organization now. James Proctor was my roommate, one of my roommates senior year, and he's pitching in the Reds organization. We had a handful of guys who went and played professional baseball, and, so we certainly had talented athletes in the Ivy League as well, but it is definitely a bit of a step up to the ACC, and, I think just the biggest difference from a day-to-day perspective is the hours limit. So in the Ivy League, the fall season was different. It was not a 20-hour period. It was a little bit more restricted. There are restrictions on the number of class days that you can miss for games and things like that in the spring in the Ivy League. So the schedule's a little bit shrunk. We would play around 40 games as opposed to the traditional 56. So there's more of a commitment to, from the league and from the institution of, or from the institutions of having the athletes on the field and having the athletes, really pursuing that year round. Not that we, weren't pursuing it year round at Princeton, but it was difficult with some of the restrictions that the league had in place that are not the same in the ACC that I think really allow us to train in a more efficient way that allows us just to be on the field together more.
Right.
Because you could go down and get your own work at Princeton, and many of us did, but it is different when you've got the whole team out there, and I think that's something that adds to your ability and your cohesiveness on the field, but it also adds to the team culture, and that's something that has been great that I've enjoyed in the past 2 years here.
Well, we know that you guys got the big series we just talked about with Florida State this weekend. Now, let's bring the finance department onto the show here if we can in some form or fashion. Is that about right? Are you in charge of finance, sir?
I am, but given the degree that he's about to get, I'm going to put him in charge of it here in a few weeks, I think. And it'll probably work out a little better.
There's nothing better than saying, hey, son, can I borrow a dollar, right? There's nothing better than
that. I know. How good is that going to be, right?
Yeah, I was thinking we would make sure that Chris has all the money he needs for the rest of the spring semester before we're done here. But I get the feeling in maybe a year and a half, it'll be about you making sure you have all the money you need for the remainder of your working days, Mr. Davis.
Well, I don't like the way that you're making it sound as if the rest of my working days or the rest of my days, period, are numbered there, Wes. I'm not sure how I feel about that. But yeah, I hope he will think that I've been generous to him, that his mom and I have been generous to him, and that he'll be generous to us in our time of need.
All right. So what's it been like?
Can I say one thing real quick?
Sure.
Reese, I hate to break the news to you. All of our days are numbered. I hate to break the news to you.
Have you been hanging around Billis again, where you're seizing on every little thing? Where you know what I mean?
There's always
short numbers.
There, it's just like Chris getting his degree. There's always a finish line. Yeah. Don't think this keeps going on and on and on. There's a finish line.
I know it. One day closer every day, though. Unfortunately,
that's my point. I'm just trying to cause a problem.
I'm slightly curious. What's it like being the dad of the college baseball player the last handful of years, Reese? How's that been? Has that been kind of fun, I'm guessing?
It's awesome. There's nothing like watching your children do something that they love and they're passionate about and competing. But I've also found that as awesome as it is, it can be agonizing because, he's completely cool out there. He he knows he's a great hitter, and so do I intellectually, but I'm still dying with every pitch. Mm-hmm. And there are umpires that in the moment, that especially a bunch of them in the Ivy League, that I'd like to send to. I'll give you a TV reference. I'd like to send them to the cornfield in the old Twilight Zone. But you know, so he's completely cool and he's good. But his mom and I are up there dying, you know, with every pitch. But that's part of the fun of it too. I mean, he's such a terrific player, plays with such passion and intensity. It's been fun for us to watch, and we'll go to great extremes to be able to get to watch it.
Chris, this is for you. And I know we're on national television, at least they tell us. How is mom and dad in the stands?
Yeah, what's that like, Chris?
Was this like the typical little league? And, man, dad's driving me crazy. I wish you'd just be quiet a second. Just let me go play. You tell us. What was mom and dad like in a ball game?
No, they're awesome up there, you know, and they make incredible efforts to get to as many games as they can. But when they're there, they're absolutely great, you know. I always try to make an effort to spot them out and tip my cap to them before the game. But other than that, you know, they're you know, I don't notice them or anything like that. They're you know, they're cheering us on, you know, rooting for the Blue Devils, and so it's you know, it's just they're enjoying the game. But you know, maybe inside they're tossing and turning a little bit. But on the outside they do a great job. So yeah.
Sounds like he's covering up the guy in the stands with the big set of lungs.
Hey, Wes, I'm gonna confess something here. I don't know if you guys will like this story or not, but I'm going to tell it anyway. This summer, when he was playing for the Bristol Blues in the New England Collegiate Baseball League, there was an egregious called third strike. Not against him, by the way. It was against one of his teammates, a kid that I didn't even really know that well. And so the umpire decides it's about him, and he throws the kid out of the game, despite the fact that all he said was that was three balls off or whatever he said. Throws him out of the game and then prances toward the Bristol dugout and says, he's out, who wants to be next? And it got away with me, and I stood up and said, how about me? And my wife pulled me and said, people are going to video you. Don't do that. So I hushed up pretty quick after that. So generally speaking, I'm pretty quiet and keep it all inside up there, but I can have my switch flipped every now and then, I guess. So.
By the way, Reese, it's funny you bring that up because we have video. Would you like to see it?
No, I would not like that.
That's beautiful. I'll
tell you what, Chris, you're a good sport for doing this. You sure you don't need any spending money this weekend at Tallahassee to be handed over?
No, I think I'm all set. They do a great job of feeding us on the road, so we'll be good.
Hey, by the way, before we let you go, though, I do need to ask Chris one of our traditional
question. Oh, yeah, the traditional one.
Our traditional question, because Chris is making his debut with us.
That's right.
And you could go any way you want with this. In fact, I'll ask a dual question here. Your hardest class at Princeton, and what has been your hardest class at Duke?
My hardest class at Princeton was a molecular biology course that I took my freshman spring. I was also dealing with a difficult injury at the time, and I think just the combination of having that class with that lab and dealing with the injury, it was probably the toughest academic class that I've had. Here at Duke, I took a managerial accounting course this fall that I really actually enjoyed, but it was very difficult, and I think that was the most difficult class from a content standpoint here.
Well, again, congratulations on all your success. I mean, seriously, that's exactly what it's all about, is getting a great degree, and you've gotten a couple of them, and on top of that, I play some baseball too. It's a beautiful thing, so keep up the great work.
Thank you.
All right.
Hey, CD, hit a double.
Reese is going to hang with us here for a second. Chris, thank you again. Great to have you with us, and we wish you all the luck this weekend at Florida State.
Thank you very much.
Reese, I want to pivot here to tonight because you've seen Duke, we've all seen Duke, and yet Texas Tech has become kind of this thing because of what Mark Adams has done in year one. And I think we're all intrigued a little bit about the matchup tonight, and sidebar, the way it might be whistled, because the Red Raiders will come at you and they don't mind the bump at the block. They don't mind the hand check on the perimeter. This is not your Freedom of Movement Classic tonight. I mean, this could get really interesting. And yet I still think Duke took a step Sunday in Greenville against Michigan State.
I feel the exact same way. I have this thing now, because my bracket's always wrong, that whatever I do initially is what I stick with. This is where I pick the road to end for Duke, because I'm going to be completely honest about it. We had seen them fade down the stretch when challenged at the ends of games, North Carolina, Virginia Tech, most notably. There have been a couple of other ones that they pulled out of the fire later in the season, and I didn't have a lot of confidence in them winning a game like that, Wes. But Michigan State was playing to that script. You know, Duke fell behind by 5 late, and you said this is just like the late fade against Carolina, the late fade against the Hokies, and they're going to do it again, except they didn't. And I think that will serve them well. Duke is by a significant margin the more talented team between the two. I had a hunch initially that Texas Tech would be able to bully them a little bit. And now I'm a little less sure of that. Not that Michigan State necessarily is that type of team that Tom's had in past years, that, you know, really, really physical, tough teams, but more of the mental response and still making plays and playing your game when you look like you're in trouble. And I do think Duke took a giant step forward in that Michigan State game, and I think it will serve them well tonight. They are the more talented team. I know Texas Tech's favored by a single, but I think that Duke should win the game. As I said, full disclosure, initially I picked Texas Tech, but I think Duke should win the game. And I was encouraged from their standpoint by the way they responded late against Michigan State.
All right. I know you and I spoke Monday on the radio show, so I'll try to twist a different question to you and tie it into ESPN here. BPI, my favorite, has the ACC losing every one of their games moving forward. You agree with that? I know you just said that Duke is going to win. How about the other two? BPI going to get it right
or wrong? I said I thought they were better, and I thought they should win. I don't necessarily know if I'm willing to say they will win, but they should.
So BPI goes.
You know, the BPI thing is because the ACC did poorly and overall in the non-conference. They had some good wins. Duke had some great wins in the non-conference. But that's part of the reason that drags their number down. I think North Carolina can and will win. I don't know that I agree with it. Miami probably can and maybe should win. So I think, I think the ACC is going to serve itself well, but remember, all of this stuff is predictive and it's useful, but it doesn't account for everything that can happen. I'm not down on BPI or KenPom or any of that stuff the way you are, Mark. I believe in it. I don't believe it's fallible. It almost by definition, it tells you that there's a 72% chance a team will win. Well, that leaves 28%. The 28% happens, you know, in balls sometime. We were just talking to my son. He's into the analytics stuff. He had a ball against Virginia that was something like, I think, a 90-something percent hit probability when you hit the ball at that speed and that angle. Guy caught it. You know, he ran it down. What are you going to do? You know, so sometimes the 28% happens. And that's the way I look at the BPI thing. So I don't think it's, you know, a conspiracy thing against the ACC teams. The ACC teams didn't perform well in the regular season for the most part. But now they are, and so that's good.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. I do believe the tournament has given us what we thought we were going to get, though. It's given us a bucket of upsets. It's given us great stories. But it also gives us a lot of tradition here for the last three or four weeks of the season, three or four games. And that's the other thing I really like about this too, Reese.
I agree with you. I mean, there are memories to be made. You've got the St. Peter's story. You have, you know, Carolina's continued resurgence. You have Larrañaga's veteran team. And, of course, Coach K's last run through the tournament. You know, his last Sweet 16 game is coming up after he just won his last round of 32 game and won his last. You know, everything's a last. And there's a certain amount of pressure that goes with that for the players and a certain amount of, historical perspective that goes along with it for those of us who love watching it. So, you know, I'm looking forward to it too. I think there are a lot of really entertaining matchups and a lot of things that that could really set us up for a great Final Four in a couple of weeks or a week and a half.
Yep. I tell you what, thanks for letting us have fun with Chris. That was good.
Oh, you bet. He's grown. He's a grown man. He makes his own media appearances these days. So, you know, so whatever he decides to do, I got to get you a copy of that Princeton thesis, Wes, on the real Papio Dano.
Dude,
I think I've told you guys this before. The real Papio Dano, who was a governor in Texas and a U.S. senator, is there are two men who have defeated LBJ in an election. Papio Dano and John F. Kennedy.
Wow.
In Democratic primary in 1960.
There you go.
Now that's
some heady company for Pappy.
That is the kind of information that not a single conference network can deliver.
Let me tell you this.
That right there.
Tell him, Reese. That telling tales out of school, boy. That man inside will pay you $10 singing to a can. Love it. Hey, be well. Thanks a lot.
All right, guys. Thanks for having us on.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.